So we'll begin this evening's meeting of the Finance and Facilities Committee, August 13th, 2012, a little after 6, well, right about 6 o'clock. Would you just take a few moments and review the minutes from the June 15th meeting? Good, Steve?
Looks good to me.
Okay, then the first order of business this evening will be the FGM contract renewal. It's Amendment 23, Professional Services Agreement. As you know, FGM has been the architect of record for the school district for a number of years now, and has been involved with a number of projects, summer projects, stormwater projects, the 10-year life safety study, and so forth. So this is Amendment 23, and this would be for the projects that were going to discuss it a little later in the evening. I thought it is appropriate that we bring both the FGM contract, the architectural contract, as well as just sort of your first round, take a look at the summer capital project for next year. Here we are already looking at next year's project when we're really still trying to finish up this year. So just to give you an idea of, I wanted to be able to give you an idea of what was going to be involved or what we're talking about for next year, and sort of get your input on that. So the first, these are numbered by project number, project 12, 1499.01. It's a personal services agreement. This is sort of the umbrella of the agreement with FGM, and it involves a number of different types of projects that they may, that we may bring to them that will require their input. Interior, exterior type of building projects. You're going to see a little later this evening the painting plans. We're talking about actually finishing a 21st century painting. That will be at Hadley next summer. And then just a number of other different projects that we may have on board. Project 12, 1499.02 is the master planning. There is an attachment, Exhibit C, a little later in the packet here. As you know, we are updating our master facility plan, and we're engaging FGM to help us with that process. They spent, I guess it was about 4 years ago now, when we originally went through the master facility plan. It was updated, recommendations were made because of economic conditions. We never really rolled those out or got very aggressive in pursuing those. So here we are four years later, sort of updating those plans, see where they align with 21st century learning environments, and just trying to get that project updated. There's a recommendation brought to the board in the spring of 2013, and there's a cost estimate of about $78,000 for that work. I did want to mention that Ann and I have had conversations with FGM. There's about $15,000 of that $78,000 out there that we don't think we may utilize. So we can talk about it this evening, but there's one meeting out there, or a series of meetings, that we really don't know, really don't think that we'll ultimately spend that full $78,000. Project 12, 1499.03, that's the program site for Hadley Media Center that we're looking to update next summer. That's sort of our cornerstone project that we're looking to do. You know, over the past several years, we've put additions on Hadley. We've done limited amount of roofing, but parking lots and boilers and air conditioners and, you know, the whole gamut of things. And we really thought it was about time to start taking a look inside of our buildings, see what we may do. You know, we have our physical structures in place, and we thought it's time to start looking within those four walls in terms of how we can update our facilities so it's in alignment with 21st century learning characteristics. So the Hadley Library Center, like I said, is really our cornerstone project for this next coming year, 2013-14. 12-1499-04 would be to provide the actual architectural services for that project. 1499.05 are any of the other projects that we may bring that you'll see a little later in this board report here. In particular, we'll be looking at the roofwork that we think we may need to start approaching. I know over the years you've seen the annual roof and parking lots surveys and so forth, and I'm just getting a little concerned that we really haven't addressed it since about 97 or 98. We are beginning to have some issues. Dave, our director of buildings and grounds, did tell me we had some issues at Lincoln with one of the rains this summer, and we continue to have some issues, minor issues over at over at Franklin, and ultimately some issues we have occasionally over at Hadley also. Then the other two remaining parts, which are 1499 and 0.06 and 07, these are things we do on an annual basis. Annually, we need to have the mobiles, the portables inspected. FGM does those reports. They file the necessary documents with the Regional Office of Education, and then we're allowed to move forward with educating kids in there annually in the fall. And then finally, annually, we do the roof evaluation, just trying to make sure where we're at with any particular roof work, and we do have some recommendations. You'll see as part of this presentation a little later this evening. I have budgeted $250,000 for architectural and engineering fees for this coming fiscal year, 2012 and 13, and this included in a budget that you're going to see a little later this evening. We would look to bring this recommendation, obviously, to the Finance and Facilities Committee this evening. We'd like to bring it to the board for discussion on August 27th, and then for action approval at the September 10th meeting. Are there any questions?
Bob, how does this align with the policy in terms of
the review of professional review. Services?
Yeah, did the dates match up? When we change that, is it something we're going to look at on at the end of the year? I'm sorry, at the end of the summer.
I would say. It was my intention to review those every couple of years. If okay. we want to do it annually, I suppose we can move that up. But it was my intention, as I was reviewing this work for this evening just a couple of weeks ago, I know that we have established that matrix, and my thought was that we would at least review that every couple of years.
I thought we put a policy in place that we would do that on an annual basis. And I'm just curious
Well, the timing was the fall.
The fall. So we're mm-hmm. kind of.
But I'll have to look to look at the exact language I didn't think it was annually. I thought it was on an as needed basis. But let's check the policy to be sure.
Dan, do you recall?
Are you talking about the evaluation of our services?
Right.
Yes.
Yeah, I do recall us saying, there would be a more thorough one every. 2-3 whatever years,
mm-hmm.
but I thought on an annual basis at least there would be an update to that.
To just say we're happy that we had a good year.
Mm-hmm. We had that card I think you guys presented last year.
Yeah, it has to be done though in the fall as we've concluded the summer projects.
Okay.
So I'll look that up and make sure we have the right date.
The only concern with timing is if we're doing some amendment and then you find out the scorecard shows an issue, then that means you're stuck another, you're stuck a year.
Right.
Okay, I can just pull that, we'll review the language and then I can always pull that matrix up and we can, I would say, probably put it together pretty quickly. And just to give you an update, we are just about concluding things up at Hadley. Our work is done. It essentially is completed with earthworks, the project itself. Village seems to be a little bit behind in some of their work. They were working feverishly this afternoon as the rain was hitting, trying to finish up the sidewalk, some streets. I did speak with Bob Minix, the village engineer, this afternoon. Kenilworth will be open first thing tomorrow morning so we can get traffic up and down that street. As you know, we have the a Hadley startup tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
So we do have some more concrete work that I've asked them to hold off on, probably coming back on Wednesday or Thursday, versus trying to bring trucks in and out of that parking lot along that area tomorrow when we may get 1,000, 1,500 visitors in that building. Parking lot's done. East access is completely open. That lot's open. And the main lot that we've just completed, that is also finished. Mm-hmm. Landscapers were finishing up today. Mm-hmm. So our work is essentially done over there.
I drove through the parking lot the other day.
Pedal pass this afternoon.
Get the feel of it. Held your car, okay?
Drifting with the car.
I like the grading. I like the line of sight. I mean, it's just a much, like we said, safer.
It's a nice, clean.
Yeah, it is.
It looks great. It turned out really well.
Yeah.
It looks good with the new sod.
They just finished that.
They were watering the sod when I was driving past. It looks really good.
And Bob, I had a question on master planning portion. I guess maybe there's not enough detail here. I still don't quite understand that activity that we're talking about having FGM doing. You know, it looks like there's some monthly meetings, but I'm not quite sure what is the outcome of those meetings.
We have gone back into the master facilities plan itself, which I think I indicated to board members in a Thursday letter. Mm-hmm. and we're looking at all of the buildings again and analyzing 21st century learning ideas against the work that was done in 2008 to determine what, if any, changes we might make to the configurations that were provided then. And so we've been having mostly discussion meetings, you know, to talk about think tank work, what kinds of recommendations might come out of think tank, what implications might there be from that as it relates to classrooms. Do we still have the right kinds of identifiers in the plan that we had 3 years ago, 4 years ago? So for an example, you know, we're looking now at larger spaces that can be used for labs, which we didn't have STEM labs built into the first master facilities plan. So it's that kind of conversations we're having currently, Dan.
Okay.
There's some detail, too, Dan, on FGM's breakdown as well. In fact, they go into much more detail about what the project objectives are, and that helped, to your point, that helped me understand relative to the master facility plan what they're coming in to do. And since they were the architect on record then, it's really, you know, they were working with MFP anyway, so that was helpful for me to go into their, you know, onto their document.
And I was looking at that, and maybe it's page 6 of the packet, but it would just, I don't know, when I see test fits and stuff like that,
mm-hmm.
I always look at it, you're either doing it or you're not, and if you are going to do it, then why do you have to do test fits? Why not just do it?
I'm not sure. Could you explain that a little bit more?
Sure. I guess this is...
It's number 3.
Mm-hmm. It's page 6, I guess, of the actual FGM document.
Right, and it says Master Facilities Planning Committee meeting in August, develop building concept test fits to reflect the programming discussions.
Yeah, there's some monthly meetings I guess it says weekly, but they talked about by the month they're doing some test fits.
Well, one of the things that we're looking at in the short term is, given the recommendations that we anticipate coming from Think Tank, how might we build STEM labs into our elementary buildings currently without any, without a big building campaign? And yet, even if we recommend something like STEM labs to be put in the short term, we want to make sure that their location, what we're doing, is not something we would undo in a larger building campaign later on.
Right, but I guess I'm saying if we say, yeah, we're going to do a STEM lab, then just, you know, they go ahead and do it as a part of that reconfiguration or construction.
Well, when you say test fit, what does that mean?
Yeah.
I would say this is preparatory work in terms of finding exactly what those STEM labs are going to look like, STEM and STEAM labs will ultimately look like. So this is sort of the preparatory work of bringing all the various groups together within the district administration, staff within the buildings. We have had parents, that's on the LMC, group, but I'm trying to bring everybody together and just determine what's going to be the best fit and not something that will ultimately lead something that won't have to be undone in the future.
Mm-hmm. And a test fit will, you know, they might have, based on our conversations with them, they'll go back and here are some options, here are some ideas of where this lab might go. What, how does that look to you? What might be the barriers to that? What about flow? What about things that they might not know other about the school that we would want to re-engage in conversation with them about, rather than having them just come back with a plan?
All right, I get that. I'm just struggling a little bit with, I'm seeing from now August through the end of December probably about a $20,000 a month expenditure, and you know, I wonder what, you know, if that money could just be put towards building the STEM labs anyway. You know, I just don't see enough substance there. I guess maybe I'm not fully understanding all the details.
Okay, it's part of it. Again, when I wanted to push around test fit, being able to look at our current space and also not creating further problems, I guess, or challenges based on what we're needing to fit in already with some of these other curriculum changes.
So would you be looking for greater clarification in terms of what will take place on a monthly basis?
Well, I guess it's not so much that. I just don't understand what, you know, what are they going to provide in 4 months that's going to help us make a decision better in the future?
It's really,
you know, it just seems like a large expense if we're going to go ahead and do it anyway.
Well,
but isn't that what
we're
testing?
Costs involved with this, the costs you would have done anyway as part of your project to do this.
I would say it would be part of the work that we would do up front that probably wouldn't be done in the
back. Well, that's
the back
concern. You're calling master planning instead of, you know,
summer project.
Let's just call it STEM lab, you know, prep work or something.
But it is bigger than that. It looking at, you know, we identified the resource area, integrated resource areas for the master facilities plan. Right. We're looking at that to say, do we still, given where we're at, given the kinds of things we're recommending, do integrated resource areas still work? And if so, do the same numbers of them work, or would the configuration be different that we might be looking for? So we're doing a little bit of short-term, like just summer project planning with them, but because it's based on the educational program recommendations, we're looking at the master facilities plan as well. So we're sort of doing both at the same time to try to make sure that we're not making short-term decisions that would impact, as Bob said, something we'd have to undo later on. So that may be one reason why it's a little unclear. Would it be helpful if I sent our minutes from our last couple of meetings?
These are meetings with staff and FDM?
They're just,
not public meetings.
No, they're just meetings with staff.
Okay.
Mostly just cabinet members. And we wanted to expand the group once we felt we had our feet little bit more solid, to include members of the think tank, members of the finance advisory if they were interested, a board member, so that we began to place, you know, really go back and revisit the master facilities.
Does FGM run these meetings? I mean, who can run FGM at that?
FGM, I'd say, runs the meetings, yes.
Ron's there,
Chris Grandy,
Jim Wood.
If Ron's not, you know, usually one or the other of them is there.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like part of the challenge is that we kind of stopped looking at those MFP recommendations, and they're 4 years old now.
Yeah.
And in the interim, we've made some significant shifts in program, curriculum needs, et cetera, especially with the 21st century learning. So what I'm hearing is that part of the testing of this is to make sure that some of those original recommendations are not lost, but that we're finding a way to blend them and will they work? And if they don't, then what do we need to do to work around it? And what's the priority at this point?
And again, long term, we don't want to do work and then 2, 3, 5 years down the road,
yeah,
we have to undo the work. So that's why we're bringing them in on the front end of this project versus later on.
Yeah. Well, we also have to be cognizant of the fact that we don't have any immediate plans for major building renovation, and so if we want to move forward with some of the recommendations that we'll be hearing, how do we make our facilities relate to that and be able to accommodate that to the extent possible? So it's, you know, I think we're challenging FGM on two levels. One, help us in the short term do way more than our buildings really are capable of doing, and then keep it in mind for the long term when we hopefully have an opportunity to make renovations on a larger scale.
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions? Okay. Then the next order of business this evening will be the initial review of 2013 capital projects. And what I thought I would do is I've given you a list here in terms of what we're looking at now. These are things also that have been rolled into the FGM contract. And then I was just going to take you through and show you some of the work that we've done or are doing now. So, Mike, let's see. We start with Hadley Library. There we go. We have three slides here, and I'm hoping you can see this. We have three slides here, which are three different options that we're looking for renovating the Hadley Library next summer. Just to give you a little point of reference here, this is the existing courtyard here with the doors or windows that lead out into that area. And then just to kind of show you what we're intending of what it may look like. We're going after flexible seating, introduction of exterior lighting. Flexibility is important. Being able to accommodate small groups and larger groups, and as been mentioned, a good place for professional development, things of that nature down the road. You probably can't see it, but this is the existing lab here. Let me just kind of walk you through the whole process here. Right in about this area here is the existing entranceway to the library. It's been mentioned to us that they thought really the best place for that library entrance would be in alignment with sort of the grand hallway as you come down Hadley, to make it a clearly visible sort of a high profile area for the junior high. So you would enter through here. These are individual groups, small group workspaces. This is small group workspaces also, but a lot of different types of configuration here. Most of your bookcases and so forth will be along the exterior walls, although you will have some 3-foot portable cases along this area here and in here. This is the general circulation area in the middle of the room as it is, and then these again are small group work areas. We also have, I believe that's a demonstration area here. You're going to see a couple of different layouts for that.
Is there a traditional desk, sign-in, sign-out desk like we have currently?
Yeah, that's going to be right in here.
So that,
in this particular drawing,
mm-hmm.
currently it's located
right,
in this area. So they've placed it in a couple of different spots. But so this is just one mm-hmm. way of us taking a look at it.
And the moving of the door was really our request to FGM to see if they could figure out how to do that. They might not have come to us with that option because it did require a good deal of reconfiguring. But
there's some significant engineering work that needs to occur in that area. But that comment or that suggestion came out of a group of folks here with the district.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you'll see that pretty consistently through all these approaches.
Mm-hmm.
Before you go to the next slide, the Twain Lab would stay as a stationary lab, and the room next to it would become kind of a green room, a video production room that could be used then for projects.
Mm-hmm.
And so the two rooms would somehow be joined together, and I can't remember, Mike, did we talk about that becoming a Mac? Or
no,
keeping the Mac downstairs?
No, it's mainly for video production, kind of room. having space for that. We did talk a little bit about the toying lab, but we didn't talk about specifics of what hardware we
need. Yeah. But we keep that as a lab.
Right. We still look at that as being a hardwired lab.
Yeah.
Just for the near future.
And then these are small group areas specifically set aside for small groups.
Next one, please.
No, it stays there. There's just another slide to it.
There it is.
Just a second.
Yes.
Number two. Okay. This one gives a slightly different feel to it. Again, you still have the courtyard on this side, the labs, obviously the grand entranceway, if you will, here. Small group is a little bit differently designed. In other words, this is more open here. Previously, we had some spaces, but we never really defined what those walls would look like. Mm-hmm. Here you actually won't even have walls. You'll just have small group spaces for individual meeting areas. And then here is the circulation desk in this area. And then instead of the demonstration area being in a long sort of rectangular type of configuration, this sets something out a little bit different, a little more grand, if you will, on an angle or half moon shape. And these are just suggestions that we're looking through and just trying to see how much flexibility the ADA is based on what it would ultimately look like. These are very general, very sort of large-scale schematics. Nothing has been developed to a specific scale or particular design.
Mm-hmm. So what's along the window?
Here?
Yeah.
Well, we've talked about a couple of different things. We've talked about them remaining as windows. We've talked about them being pivot doorways, where the doors actually can open up so that there's a when they're obviously they're closed, there's a solid line to break between the outside and the inside. You can also open them so they'll pivot on one corner and be open and have some transference back and forth.
Garage doors like the restaurant.
Yeah. That's what I like that. It's a little pricey.
Well, you talked about trying to blend the outside inside as a part of.
Yeah,
even that was on the MFP, right? Yeah. How do we? I remember that part of the conversation. How do we bring the outdoors in?
How do you transition back and forth between the spaces?
Right. The sliding glass.
Yeah, you just got to get rid of those vinyl blinds.
Yeah.
And Bob, I know that you said you had a third option too that was provided. Are these clusters? They're all flexible.
Right.
So
everything. Nothing is
permanent.
Nothing is permanent.
I think the one room that would be permanent, there are two places where it looks to me like we put walls. We in the first time we went through, we had a little more walls, but I think the presentation area, those have solid walls.
Mm-hmm.
And then up in the right-hand corner of the library, is that still a quiet reading room?
I believe so.
Mm-hmm. And that would probably have a glass wall.
Yeah, we're talking about working with a lot of glass. So this may be a permanent wall, but it would be glass, so it still gives you some visibility in between areas. And also, they want to be able to provide good sight lines for the circulation desk for supervision.
How's the landscaping survive the hot summer?
It's fine.
Yeah.
The courtyard landscaping's fine.
Courtyard is fine.
Mm-hmm.
And a little green algae in the water.
Yeah.
But they were able to get that taken care of. Really made the weather well this summer. So. And then the final diagram, and again, these are all just very initial sketches that they're taking. Again, the courtyard area. This has got a little more work with the labs in here. This is if we become more intrusive in the labs. These are actual, I can barely read it, the grand entrance demonstration area, and this might be sort of a quiet area in here for students. Small group in this area here, but rather you might have small group in here, and exactly what that looks like, I don't think we really know at this time. But you might have some small group instruction here, some flexibility for seating in this area, and then flexibility throughout this area here with different types of seating available.
Well, there's a high ceiling in there, isn't there? I mean, what kind of walls are you putting up?
You know, Steve, I don't know that we've really gotten there yet. We just wanted to bring you a flavor for what we're talking about here. I believe the goal is natural daylight, maintaining the high ceilings for visibility, for just to add a nicer flavor to the room?
And very few permanent walls.
Right, so these are all kind, yeah. So
they're
say,
configurations
they're
of furniture.
They're going to be 8 feet high or something, but the ceiling's much higher than that.
Yeah, and not even necessarily, you know, except where, like, that quiet reading area is and the classroom, where you wouldn't have anything higher than movable furniture, you know, that might be a wall divider even.
And we don't see large you know, walls or things of that nature in this this particular area.
This is also built upon the belief that the collection itself will diminish over time. Chris is going to be doing a weeding of the collection this year and would anticipate he'll go from about 21,000 volumes down to 14. And that over time that would just get smaller and smaller because you'd be increasing the amount of digital access that students have. And so you'd be very selective about print material. But Hadley's in need of a significant weeding. And so as Chris has looked through the catalog, he believes he can diminish the actual collection by significant numbers.
And not lose the value of the collection.
No.
Yeah.
No, but there are many volumes that are not...
I volunteered there.
That aren't needed. That can be accessed, you know, via the internet.
Yeah.
So that's what I have so far for planning for the Hadley Library for next year. I wanted to show you a couple of other things. We're going to be looking
Steve,
at...
Steve, you have a question?
Well, just sometimes the library is used as another large room to
mm-hmm.
have a bigger
right.
gathering.
Right.
That is somehow in the plans outside of the...
I know
it is.
Well,
we wanted
a
to
wall
be.
That you can project something on other than like in the auditorium right now.
Right.
Because
mm-hmm.
right now there isn't a good wall to
mm-hmm.
do that.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about mm-hmm. having the ability for maybe 120, 130 bodies in there for professional development,
uh-huh.
things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So
for a class meeting or something. Mm-hmm.
It reminds me a little bit of Hubble, when we went to see Hubble, and the flexibility that they built in with breakout space and
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So that's our first just run through with the Hadley Library. Mike, we're also talking about STEM labs, the introduction of STEM labs at the elementary schools. So we're gonna get out of there. PowerPoint. And this is something that FGM put together for us. I'm just going to run quickly through this just to give you a flavor for what those STEM labs may ultimately look like. And again, it's kind of broad, kind of everybody doing something a little bit different at this time. I don't think there's a lock sort of look to a particular lab at any given time. So, Mike, I want to get to some of the pictures here. Yeah, here. Flexible seating, open spaces, brighter lighting, sinks on the side here.
And that was in an elementary school?
That was in an elementary
okay.
school, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Washington Irving Elementary School, where it's at, I don't really
and
know.
And then in Indiana.
I guess that would help.
I've been at school.
Okay. Another spot in terms of what this looks like, much open, much more open ceilings, a lot of lighting upstairs. It looks like this may even be a small courtyard or so, or a hallway or something in there with some, maybe some outdoor lighting. Flexible spaces, that sinks in the room. Looks like they have some labs or some cabinetry on those walls. Again, something else, just another idea of what a lab may ultimately look like. This here just shows some flexibility in terms of seating. Most of the rooms are open, and then they have a lot of flexibility with regards to the type of furniture put in there, any uses for it. And it's just elementary STEM lab and teaching spaces and kids. This actually here is a high school STEM lab. I don't know that we would be interested in doing something like that, but I just did want to introduce this to you. Mm-hmm. You know, we've talked at some of our meetings about what's occurring up at Niles, in the Niles High School district. I guess they're sort of really out there on the edge of their thinking right now in terms of what they're doing there. So mm-hmm. I don't know about applicability towards the elementary level, but
yeah, they used to have real apps.
You mentioned that. You mentioned that often.
We used to have sinks and everything just like that. We did chemistry experiments.
Mm-hmm. And again, this really just starts to run through the rest of some high school examples and college examples. So I just wanted to give you a flavor for what's happening at the elementary and junior high school level. Mm-hmm. Okay, Mike? On your sheet here, I've also mentioned the building painting. I'm going to be looking to do the painting of Hadley, finishing the 21st century painting project for next year. That's a project that really now will be in the third year since we started this, and we'd like to move forward with that. I've already begun preliminary discussions with the architects in terms of what their involvement will be. We'll have them design or put together the painting requirements for the interior of the building, and then we, as we did this year, we will bid that ourselves and manage the project ourselves. So, Mike, we're going to get out of here. And I wanted to show you a couple of, we've talked about roofing. We haven't done any, and I guess it's about 97 or 98. I just wanted to give you sort of a couple of hot spots in terms of what's happening out there with us right now. And actually, I wanted to go to these are the two areas. You're going to get two areas here. You're going to get Franklin, and then you'll get a spot of Lincoln. These are aerial views in terms of what we're proposing to do next summer. This is the area here at Franklin where we're having the most trouble with, and I'll show you some shots a little later in terms of what those areas actually look like. Mike, can you move that? Again, that's a better, a different shot for the for Franklin. Next one down, we have Lincoln. In terms of what that looks like, and this is the area that we're having problems with, really from east to west along sort of the central part of the building. And there's some water infiltration in this area right here. And then one more shot, Mike. Again, that's another aerial view.
Were all the roofs redone at the 98 upper end?
I don't think all of them were done.
There was only one roof that has been done since I've been here in 2003, and that was the porcelain hand made roof project on, I believe, over the Lawrence Town area. And that's because it was not part of the 97-98 referendum. I think most roofs, if they were within 20 years of that, probably may not have been done. But if they were older than that, they were. That's, and then, along with the addition.
Right, that's what I'm saying, like that part of Franklin, some of that was addition, wasn't it? Of that roof? I mean, that's 15 years. I mean, that roof should last longer than that, shouldn't it?
Depends on how the roof was designed. You have 10, 20, 30-year roofs.
Right.
And I've seen them. I had an experience in a previous district where it was like 10 years and a day, mm-hmm. and that roof was leaking. So at least these are the areas that have been identified. The Director of Buildings and Grounds now has been on with us for a couple of months. We've experienced a couple of issues in each one of these locations.
Are you familiar with roofing problem?
Pardon me?
Are you familiar with roofing problem?
Who's
Ackerman Sports Company.
Ackerman. I was trying to write and I didn't know.
No, I got it.
Bob, I had a question on these roofing projects.
Sure.
I'm just wondering, you know, I know you have FGM do the inspections, but in terms of some of the work that you would do for the actual project itself, since there's, when you have, look at some of those roofs, there's not really a lot of new or remodeling or just typically a replacement. And I know, and some other people I know that take care of some of our corporate buildings will frequently engage, you know, specific roof consultants that can actually help out, you know, identify the problems, help manage the repair. at usually a low expense rate. I didn't know if that's something that you've heard of or had experience.
Sure. We use Corralder Roofing. They've been used in the district for, I don't know, 15 or 20 years. Yeah, I shouldn't say for a long period of time. I don't know the exact number of years. But they come out annually. We work with them. They identify areas where we need to do particular work. I know that they were out on one of the buildings within the past month or so. They have worked within the district for a number of years, and we do work with them pretty closely in terms of identifying areas. You know, my goal is really to get as long a life as we can out of a roof, but what I hate to do is back us up into a corner where 5 years from now, all of a sudden, we might need $10 million worth of work. So we're trying to prioritize our expenditures over a period of time and just find the best use of our dollars. When something comes up, we try to address it, but we still try to maximize the life of a particular roof.
Well, I think Dan was asking about cutting, not involving the architect and dealing directly
right.
with the roofer. Are there notification issues? Are there state requirements that an architect has to be involved?
Well, it's a school building, so an architect of record will have to be involved somewhere along the line. There are, you know, you can go with this this imaging where they test it through imaging techniques and it identifies heat leaks in a building and so forth. So that's certainly something you can do. And
does the architect do that or a roofing specialist, or do they both have that technique?
The architect hires a contractor that does that specialty.
So it's probably, if I involve the architect, that would be something that, you know, would be a run-through expense. They would go out, hire the contractor. Mm-hmm. Maybe.
So when we work with Corralder Roofing, do we hire them or do the architects hire
them? No, we hire them.
So we work directly with them. So what's the role of our architects in our roofing plan?
Long-term planning.
What's their role? They just help us with long-term planning, or
they go out. They annually inspect all of our roofs and provide us with a plan in terms of what would be the approach, given budgetary concerns, what needs to be addressed and when it needs to be addressed.
So, how is their work different than the work of Corralder's?
Well, Corralder's an actual roofer. He comes out, looks at the roof, says, you know, we've got to do A, B, C, or D, or some combination.
So he's the tactician. He's looking and saying, if we're doing this red center, Dan, we're looking at a picture of Lincoln and that, you know, that center section that has the bridge to either side of those buildings that connect.
Yep.
And that's the
yep.
area of the proposed roof replacement work. So Corralder would come in and say, this is exactly what needs to get done. So that's the tactics.
He would probably want to do the work.
Yeah, and
but
want
he's
to do
a roofing
the work.
Contractor.
Right.
So I guess the question is, how much overhead does the architect add that?
So Dan's original question was, instead of having the architects do our roof inspections and give us recommendations for what we should do, have we ever used or considered using a consultant that is just for that purpose? And he was indicating has been, for his company, less than what architects might charge. Am I restating what you asked, Dan?
It's mainly more so the work, you know, bidding out the work and managing it. I mean, because this is not your typical addition or, parking lot redo where you have to generate all kinds of documents for the bid or whatnot. You're basically just say, you know, here's the roof, here's the thickness of membrane we want, here's the, you know, the kind of tar we want. And so typically a roof consultant, or if this company has consultant manpower house, you know, it's a lot simpler process. So I'm just questioning the need for, you know, an architect to add that extra overhead on.
I'm sure that's something we could certainly take a look at. I have used outside contractors for roofing projects before. One way or another, the architects always seem to get involved somewhere down the road. So. Mm-hmm. We can certainly take a look at that.
Well, and to Ann's earlier question, if it's as a school building, you know, what is the requirement for our architect of record sign off?
I'm
to
sure
make sure we're to the ROE. I know that there's that whole piece too. So
there will have to be a sign off. There'll have to be communication with the regional office of education. There'll have to be applications made somewhere along the line. So somewhere they always are involved in the process.
So it's doing an assessment. Do we even, you know, asking Ron, what piece don't you need to be doing, or whatever it might be, or do you need to be doing all of it?
Right, I mean, it's just like a make, you know, we call it a make versus buy. You know, if you have FGM involved, what's the cost versus if you hire a consultant, your own consultant, what would the cost be? And then looking at, you know, what's the difference?
Yeah. Well, it sounds like what Bob's saying is that part of our use of the architect is that there's a more strategic view of the longevity and those kind of things from an architectural standpoint, I guess.
Well, I know that there are many roofing contractors out there, not necessarily those that do the work, but that those that come in and act as consultants.
Mm-hmm. Well, we don't want to be adding layers.
Well, that's what would happen in this particular instance.
Yeah, we don't want to add layers, but yeah, I mean, it's a worthy question.
Absolutely.
I had a question, and you may have already gone through this. Ann asked, you know, what's the difference between Corrado and FGM in terms of, you know, it looks like both entities are doing roof evaluations on an annual basis.
Crowther Roofing is a roofing contractor. They come out and do the actual work. They wouldn't create, they probably could if I asked them to, but then that would more or less slant the work towards their area of business. But I'm sure they can come in and do anything that we were to ask them to do, which is not typically how they get involved, at least from this district's perspective.
Mm-hmm. But it's and maybe I'm misunderstanding. But it, you know, you said that Corrado does a survey of the roof on an annual basis, correct?
Usually on a after an occurrence, we've got water in the building. We call Corrado. They come out. They take a look at it. Tell us what's wrong. Give us a cost of what they think it's going to cost, and then they come out and do the work. That's what their role is.
So they're not doing an annual survey.
No, and they don't do long term planning for our website.
So FGM is doing the annual survey and the long term planning.
Yes, that's it.
Okay, that's the different piece.
Mm-hmm. One's a fix it. One's an analysis.
Okay.
Any other questions on this? Any other questions on the roofing projects or any of the capital projects for next year?
Well, I was just curious on the budget when you looked at the capital projects. I know you have your alternatives on the right, but there's and maybe I'm just not remembering this, but there's a, you know, you're low and high, and it seems it's a big difference. It's $200,000. It's $100,000. It's, you know, $250,000. And so what, I'm just curious, you know, what fixes that low and high? Because the project to me would be the same. I mean, if we're going to remodel the LMC, if it comes in on the low end, what are we not doing that we might be doing on the high end?
Well, to give you an example on any of the recommendations we've brought to the board over the past several years, we try to give you a ballpark figure in terms of what those costs are going to be.
Right.
And we've run the gamut from being, you know, under budget with regards to what the estimated cost were is something significantly greater, like when we did this Hadley parking lot. The low bid was $999,999, and another bid for $1.5 million.
Right.
So that's a 50% spread.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that's just the architects trying to cover their cost estimates. They want to come up with the, you know, sort of the best scenario for us so that we budget the appropriate amount of dollars, and it gives the board the best data to make a decision on.
And is some of this then based on what we saw with an option 1, 2, and 3, depending on how much glass we put in, walls, if we intrude into the Twain computer library, then the computer center, then that adds, I'm assuming that makes sense then. Because
a lot of variables out there. But when we bring a recommendation, we want to sort of cover our bases and give you, as it indicated here, in a high and a low.
Mm-hmm. And then on the alternates, which are just in Hadley, the generator and then the back parking lot.
Right.
Those would be nice to have.
Well, I don't know. If you ask Mike, he would certainly like to have that generator.
A backup generator?
Yeah, something like we did out here.
We have one here.
We have backup batteries there. We don't have...
Right. We didn't do a generator at Hadley.
We just have UPS batteries.
And what are you going to drive off that generator?
Well, that's one of the things we've talked about. Excuse me, Mike. That's one of the things we talked about. One of the ideas that we mentioned not too long ago, with all the, just as an idea, Hadley being used as a community center in the case of an emergency, like we had a couple of times this summer where power goes out for prolonged periods of time. Not saying that would be its use, but that's certainly an opportunity out there. I would probably leave it up to Mike to determine what would his needs be. So,
yeah, well, currently we do use that as a redundancy site. Some of our major services, like our student database or even the phone system and our emergency calling, and we plan to expand upon that. So it's also a backup center. It's an off-site backup for a lot of the major databases that we house here at CSO.
So the thought of adding a generator is first and foremost in terms of data and capacity within the district, not for us.
I'm not an expert. I would just think cloud services for all that would be much cheaper in the long run than, you know, some major facility via high-speed internet. You could back up everything. But why would you want to build an infrastructure locally to do it? To be much cheaper for whatever measurement.
But does that, would the generator take care of all of what, you know, all what you're describing, or more than that? Not just data, but these other pieces.
Well, the phone service, even though we do have redundancy at the junior high, our a majority of our phone lines actually go through Apple. So it would be a backup for that. So when we lost power, it was just this when we cut the line.
July.
Yeah, to rerun it when they were doing the work at Hadley, we'll have to take down a good deal of our phone lines as well. And while we will leverage a lot of our cloud services for things like backups and considering databases, other things like our financial information or our student information, those we do house in tunneling and will continue to.
Mike, are you talking about building generator infrastructure that would essentially power the entire school, all systems, including air conditioning, if we lose power with ComEd?
Well, that's what Bob's suggesting. But all I was saying
was how much was the generator here?
$300.
It was $300?
$275, $300.
Mike wish we had a more practical perspective.
Well, that also included the UPS battery, the battery units that we have in that, as well as the tie-in with all the electrical. So everything kind of works in synchronicity. So I think all of that was included in that.
When we were talking about the possibility of a community center, we were saying it'd be an intergovernmental partnership, you know, to do that. That we wouldn't just do it out of the kindness of the district.
Yeah, all I would say is the residents to the west there don't feel they're part of the community.
Apparently not. Well, I mean,
well, they wouldn't be invited if they're in that particular office.
But if you want to use it as a community center, and all it's going to do is save, you know, backup phones and data. It doesn't run air conditioning. It doesn't fit the bill.
No, it wouldn't fit the bill for a community center. You'd have to go much bigger.
Does the one that we have in the back, if we lose power, and it just automatically flips back on, there's no interruption, everything is as if it was there were.
The building doesn't have power. Only our services do, so that we can communicate. So basically, if we lose power in the building and I am in the middle and I need to do something on the financial system, the student database system, I have to go back to the Mike's office or the tech room and do it. Because that's the only room that's powered.
Yeah. It's to protect, it's really.
To protect the fact that we can communicate. When we had the straight line winds blow through here in August 2007, we really had no way to communicate with our parents or our buildings because we didn't have power. Mm-hmm. We had 20 minutes. To grab data so that I could go home and create the expedite list so you can make calls. Granted, a lot of people in town didn't have phones either, but we were able to reach those cell phones. I mean, so that's basically what we looked at. It's just the power so we have continuous communication.
We don't have air conditioning here. We don't have lights. We don't have all of the. The generator does not bring us back to full production.
Okay, I thought for $300,000 you'd have. It would all just.
Aren't we required to have an emergency response as well? And that's a part of it. Is the communication piece?
Well, it came out of our safety
audit
that we should have, yes, that, so that we have the capacity for a safety response.
I just have to believe there's companies that provide full backup type services, you know, or even like that for doing the calling off site, where the list is already there, you know, and you just call up and add the message and they send it out from another central location.
Correct, and that's how it works. It's just that we hadn't, it was. You know.
We didn't even have cell phones that worked.
Right.
Right.
No, I understand. And that's where we got the two-way radios all set up. Right. I mean, that's what came out of that. We have that.
But the most recent power outage we had, there was some issue with the backup generator.
There was.
What was the issue with the backup generator here?
It was the generator is really just a car engine. Mm-hmm. So the thermostat malfunctioned. So I kept thinking it was overheating. Mm-hmm. And when that happened, it was shut down.
Okay.
So that was evidently just a part that broke down. It's been replaced. It's been fixed. That generator's gotten plenty of use in the period of time that we did put it in.
Mm-hmm.
And even though it may not keep this building's air conditioning and power running, it does keep our servers all running.
Mm-hmm.
And so in most cases when we lose power here, it may just be this building in Forest Glen, and the rest of the district could all be functioning, especially when students are here. And the generator does seamlessly kick in, and nobody would even know that we lost power here because they're still getting email, they still get on the internet, they can get all their databases. They really don't lose any services at all.
Yeah.
So, in most cases, like you say, when we lose power, it's really just in certain sections of the district, and oftentimes it seems to be here.
Dan, you were going to say something?
I'm just wondering, what do we do to avoid that next time? Is that an annual inspection, a monthly startup, or what? What do we do to avoid not being able to use our backup system?
And we do have annual inspections. And as a matter of fact, I believe that generator had just been inspected not that long ago. So it must have been something we just don't check. Was that thermostat?
It was an $1,800 part that just happened to go down at that particular time. Every Friday morning at 7:30, this generator fires up and does a self-check. So this was just one of those instances where things didn't go on as well as you had planned.
Okay, so the inspector didn't jiggle it loose or anything?
You're looking for somebody to blame?
No, you know, like your car, you say, I got a funny noise, and then they...
It is just like a car. We expect it to run perfectly all the time, and it doesn't. So this alternative, you'll speak further with us about it.
Yeah, you know, I was just throwing some ideas out there in terms of... projects that have been listed on the capital projects plan, and just thought I would bring them forward. Really, our recommendations really do lie with the LMC remodeling for this year, the painting of Hadley, and then the introduction of the STEM labs at the elementary level. That's where we're going with regards to our recommendations.
And I just want to clarify this, because I know, Ann, you've written this in our Thursday letters, and we've talked about this as part of the long-range plan. Part of the initiative of the media center, the LLC, is also to provide visual, especially in Hadley, where we haven't done really much of anything in terms of 21st century, to start to build that visual for community members and for parents around, this is the direction. So if they saw a slide like we did of Niles North High School, they would say, yeah, that's 21st century learning. So we're trying to make this a programmatic and curriculum connection for the students so that they have better access to, you know, one-to-one technology, the rollout, et cetera. But also to help to build that picture of where we're heading as a district. Even with the current buildings and constraints, there's things we can do internally to help move our master plan forward.
Correct.
Is that accurate?
Yes.
Okay. My talking point.
Can we go back to Bruce just for a second?
Sure.
Since the slide is already up. FTM does the annual
survey of the groups.
Correct.
Do they have on staff the technical, the expertise to do a survey of a group, or do they subcontract that out?
No, they have a member of their staff come out and visually inspect our roofs annually, and then report it, prepared, and presented.
So it's all done internally.
That's correct.
They don't subcontract
out. No.
Okay.
Any other questions for this evening's meeting? Anything else on the agenda you'd like to bring up for this evening? Any questions in anticipation of the board meeting or anything this evening?
I'm going to talk a little bit about the Finance Advisory meeting this week.
Sure. We have our second meeting of the Finance Advisory Committee this Thursday evening. We have about six or eight members now participating in that process. This week, we're going to bring forth the budget for this year as you're receiving tonight and approving. And I have some other notes of information I'm going to include in terms of what we're going to be presenting. Thursday evening, we talked about stringing together the long-range plan and things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of where this meeting will go this week.
You feel like the committee, let me preface this, in District 87, when they had a financial advisory committee, it was unclear what their role was, and so there were some folks who felt like they were decision makers, and some folks who understood that they were advisory, and some folks who were there just to get knowledge around facility issues in the district. So do you feel like this is to you guys being a part of it, but that they're clear on expectations, participation, that kind
of thing? I guess maybe after one meeting, maybe it's kind of difficult to tell, but mm-hmm. I think it was a good group of folks to bring together. It's a sort of a broad-based group of different community members,
yeah.
Parents, moms, so forth. So I just think it's it's what appears to be a great group of people to work with. So we were going to bring the budget, maybe a little bit of managed facility planning, maybe what our capital projects are mm-hmm. for next year, introduction of the 21st century learner, mm-hmm. and how these various recommendations could all kind of be rolled into one.
Yeah. They were also asked to bring their topics.
Mm.
You know, what do they want to learn more about? So I'm expecting that there'll be a list that they will generate as well of things they want to learn more about. I think it's tough to know whether a group understands its charge after its first meeting.
Right.
I think Bob trying to, indicate that the role was, to serve as an advisory, create knowledge so that ambassadorship could be built, as well as provide insights that might help guide us as we, look to future
good.
Expenditures.
Yeah. I agree. It's a nice cross-section of people. Good.
Can I ask you a quick question on the budgeted 13 capital projects?
Sure.
The professional fees in the alternates are 15% of total and 21% of total.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a realistic? Is that unique to these projects that the percentage of total to the professional fees are so high?
I would say that it's the opportunity is there for them to be possibly that costly. More, I was just trying to give you an overall flavor for what the possible exposure for expenditure.
So it's not a hard number.
It's not
just
a hard
okay.
Number. No, and when okay, you come in with projects like this,
I saw 21%.
Sure.
And I thought that seemed a little high.
Yeah, typically these are based upon a certain percent of construction costs, so it really depends upon how much. It could be a flat rate, it could be a construction cost, it could be just a general administration cost, too. So a lot of different numbers are involved in that calculation. Probably the easiest way to calculate is here's the construction cost, it's an X percent of that.
Yeah, I think it's usually
9% or something.
9 or 10%, yeah.
Because that's why when I saw 21, I thought maybe there was something very technical that they need to be involved to. But if it's just an
estimate. Just a ballpark estimate in terms of what the potential exposure may be.
You've got the back parking lot at Hadley.
Uh huh.
I could have sworn, was it last year we did something or 2 years ago?
What we did 2 years ago is we did the driveway that leads from Hawthorne up about 75 feet. We did not do the back parking lot. As a matter of fact, about 75% of the east parking lot was not touched, and everything around, except for one portion right at the back of Hadley, was also touched because it was deteriorated so badly. We actually, it was an add-on. We had to go in while they were on site to do that project. But
okay. Most
of the, I would say 80-85% of the east lot of Hadley has not been done. So really, there are two, if you want to call major projects, major parking lot projects left. That would be Churchill parking lot and then the back east section of Hadley.
Okay.
Everything else, we're in pretty good shape.
Okay. And everyone's happy with the water vaults now? The Glen Ellen's happy that we've given them all this excess capacity?
Well, I suppose it's, who do you talk to? You're talking to someone that lives in Glen Ellen, or are you talking to someone that lives in Wheaton? So there's still, I'll get a call from a Wheaton resident today that was unhappy that we did not do the Glen Cove portion of that.
Did you give him Phil's number?
She knew Phil's number. Apparently they have spoken on several occasions. She told me that she voiced her displeasure to Phil that she thought it was a great project and it should have been done.
But we have not heard anything else. That's totally off the table.
For
this year, there's no way we could.
Oh, it's done. Parking lot's done. Our contractor is just about off site.
And to do it this year or next year would be significantly more money.
Yeah.
Well, it has to go in against competing against what Bob's already laid out for you at this point.
Yeah. Well,
good project.
We lost an opportunity. Yep.
Any other questions? Then we can take a quick break and we start again at 7:15 with the budget time this evening. Thank you.
Thanks, Bob.